secret ballot issues. I think this would be a matter that should be a secret ballot issue. And therefore, also of what Honourable Boy was saying earlier on, that it will protect members of Parliament who has taken an oath of office but has to toe party lines. And not only specifically for this, but I think that while we are, although we are here specifically for the Section 89, we should look at Section 102 as well to bring this, the secret ballot, which is the same way that the person was elected into the position, that they must be removed out of a position by secret ballot. So I think it's just important that we incorporate that. As Schedule 3 prescribes the election by secret ballot, rules must then deal with a removal. And it's also protecting the Speaker and protecting all other members. From our side, that would be it for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Boy.
So, I think we must deal with the debate of when you are a victim.
Right.
The victimhood. The fact that the Member of Parliament raises the issue and part of this document doesn't protect that member, it could be a point of concern, because the President, you give him so many times, you give him legal experts and everything, but the drafter of the motion, you don't say anything much. That, but we have got so huge expectation from that member to be able to construct. So I'm just saying that a member himself, when he starts that process, can Parliament come to his side and assist him to be able to draft his motion and do his thing very properly, so that it doesn't get shot down by the Speaker on the basis that he couldn't write it properly, you see, or he couldn't explain what you wanted. So that initial stage, it's important that the dissatisfaction of the member is being brought through in a more proper, organized way, the capability and the capacity of that particular member. So that's my one part. You see, you know, in what Mazoni has been saying, we've been grappling with the power of the Speaker. Look, we can say that it's impartiality, but given the nature and the seriousness of this matter, why would it be solely the Speaker to make that type of decision? Because if you have got dissatisfaction with the Speaker, nowhere does it say take it to the Rules Committee, so that the Rules Committee can become the arbiter, rather than having the Speaker being the sole person who can then make the decision. It's not about the current individuals or whatsoever, but it's the principle of saying, can anyone, even in future, be sure, given the proportionality, that the Speaker can be so powerful in the party, and then they can go against you, you can't do anything. She's a powerful, or he is a powerful person. So for me, it would be important to bring in the Rules Committee to assist that particular, so that Parliament, through its own structures, is able to give that power, rather than giving it only to the Speaker. Because also the other challenge I have with the Speaker solo is because when there's a dispute, who comes in? Does that decision still lie with the Speaker to say, I was correct, you were wrong? It's a problem. We should always make sure, and I know that we've always been seen that we must protect members of Parliament as much as we can. So in the Rules Committee, it's easy for that particular member to put the suggestion forward that this is what I've attempted, and it seems as if the Speaker has not been able to go along with the decision or with my suggestion. And the Rules Committee becomes the final arbiter in the relation to what happened to that particular member. So if you could, within this process, emphasize that, it would be quite comfortable to make sure that members of Parliament feel protected, so that if you are not, you don't have the capacity, you are a one-man party, and you have this allegation, it's quite clear that those that are in, because in our process now, we have developed some coalitions have been beginning to take place. So they should be able to sponsor to help raise the matter within the Rules Committee, and the Rules Committee takes it up to its finality. Let the arbiter not be only be the speaker herself, because or her, himself, it, because it can become a little bit problematic. My last point, Chairperson, it is also in this thing of seriousness. You, there's no, if you put it against the Bill of Rights, there's no, if I was in America in the Bill Clinton situation, simple, straightforward. For me, the violation of human rights, gender insensitivity, if you subtopic those issues, I mean, if in the Nkandla matter, you simply say that when the president starts delving into the fiscus, which is not what he's supposed to be doing, then it becomes a serious offense, you see, because he can't say, I didn't know that people are building a house all around me, you see. A president can't, I mean, nobody can say that. Doesn't. So for me, the subtopicking of seriousness could be the matter that we could present here. That so that people become conscious that if ever I get to a presidency, it's very clear that I must not be seen putting my fingers, because as a finance minister, why do you want to get involved? There's a rape charge made by a public person to say that the president wanted to rape me. Why do you want to have a long process? It's a straight charge, so that you should be conscious that never rape when you're a president. Don't indulge in those type of things. Be a figure that society can look up to. But if you don't take that presidency serious yourself, that's where the violation of the Constitution comes in. And these things must be directed on the basis of how you conduct yourself, than be generous and what. The seriousness must be about that. Don't do things that will demean the office itself. Because if you demean the offices of the presidency, you create a problem even for parliamentarians of how they're beginning to engage with you within the public space.
So the issue here that I think we must do it much quicker, in my view, is to go back to our principles and realize that we need a new attempt. Firstly, we couldn't subject the motion for impeachment to a vote. The judgment outrules that, or to a committee that arrives at decisions through consensus. So maybe, and that's why I think there's a big room here. We should open our minds to be creative. There's no prescription. What the judgment does is to kill the options that we have, including the option of a motion that must be voted on in order for a process to happen. It says that's not what this Section 89 contemplates. Because if we can vote that no, there must not be an impeachment process, then we are no longer within the regime of Section 89. So we ought to say, what kind of a process allows the impeachment to happen? That is, for it to be referred, for the impeachment process to happen without it being blocked by the politics of majoritarianism. So that's the first sort of challenge. The second challenge is, so I would say that that's the first thing that we must answer in terms of process. What kind of an initiation of a motion allows us to have that motion implemented without it being subjected to a majoritarian politics? That's the first principle. The second one is that what kind of a process do we subject the president to, in which it establishes facts that also is not about majoritarianism. So really, it seems to me that the answer to the first question is, when the person gives rights to the speaker, and I'm fine with the speaker, they must give evidence, a prima facie evidence, that I think there must be a process to impeach the president. And the speaker can say, okay, you have not drafted it well, this is how it can be drafted, refers it to this body, that we must answer to the second question. And our proposal is that it must be retired independent judges. We must have a process of establishing them when the parliament term begins. Five of them, and then three of them may sit in that to consider those specific cases of Section 89. So between themselves and the speaker, I think we have a leeway to determine without, because what we need to determine, what we need to clear out in the beginning is that such a decision is not about majoritarianism. Because if that's the case, we can just block even before the process begins. So those are the two challenges that we have. And then where is this document? Yes. You see, okay, so that has to do with the first, with Section 81, Section 89, subsection 1 A and B only. So we still need a process for the last one, which is if the guy suffered from a stroke. And I think that we need a set of, we still need a predetermining process even in that case, but it can't be the same way as it has to be different. So those are the three challenges I put to us. And I argue we must go answer those three questions, we'll have a new draft, completely new. Because this one, its philosophy has been rendered futile by the judgment. It has been rendered impotent. It has unable to produce effect to Section 89 because it depends on committees, it depends on the ad hoc committee, which have been outruled by the Court of Law. Now, this leaves me with the last challenge. The president might say when he appears in front of those judges, this is not Parliament. No, he can't, because it would have been a decision of Parliament to establish such a committee. It would have delegated fact-finding, and it's there in the examples we have provided. It would have been us who have taken a decision in our rules that, and you know, those judges may never work for 20 years. We put them there on standby, it's like a funeral committee. If nobody dies, the funeral committee never comes to effect. So somebody must die for the funeral committee to come. But either way, we can't decide the funeral committee upon death. The wisdom is to do it before. In this case, it's even more wise to establish that committee before you do the misconduct, because you can't say those judges are biased. Because they were put on standby before you engaged in serious violation of the Constitution, in serious misconduct, and so on and so forth. I argue that that's our best mechanism. But those are my proposals. Finally, two pieces of legislation. One is the Judicial Service Commission Act. It has a process of impeaching judges. The second one is the Powers and Privileges Committee Act that impeaches us, like that deals with our misconduct. Yeah. Principles are already very clear there. If we could go into it, we can. But I think that we say these are the three questions you must answer and use to arrive at a rule, at a draft rule. Look at the Judicial Service Commission Act, look at the Powers and Privileges Act, and then we'll have a completely different thing. But in relation to what's happening there at the end, except the committees and all of that, the thinking was actually spot on to separate between A and B and C, because they require a different form of judgment. But that's our take. I have to emphasize that the judgment gives us that space. If we read it closely, it gives us that space to even use judges. Because if they are decided by us, nobody can say, no, this is not Parliament holding me. No, we are giving you a fair trial before we remove you or we keep you. We are deciding, we want to give you, in fact, we are so good that we give you a fair trial. You appear in front of people who are not politically conflicted. And who else in society has better passed that test, even better than priests, are judges. Retired judges who don't need a promotion, who don't need to be a chief justice, shame. They just want society. They are concerned about the future. So that is important. That's why, I mean, when you select commissions, we see there the wisdom. Are you going to go for a sitting judge? Are you going to go for a retired judge? It strengthens your capacity for the credibility of the process, even if we may have all the complete trust on judges. But some of these judges, what I like, part of what they do, you should see the Afrikaans judgment that was read before us. One of the judges confesses, puts their own, that I too went to an Afrikaans dominated language school, blah, 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 and blah, blah. They demonstrate to you that they too are you, but the highest test is a retired judge, chief. It doesn't need to be a chief justice tomorrow or to be given anything. They are now concerned about society. And that's a fair trial. We give you a tribunal. They give us an answer that you have violated the Constitution seriously. Then we go to the House. And then you can decide, you may remove the president or not. There we can do the politics. But the first process, what is envisaged, that it must be politics free. And that's those are the three important tests that it must pass. Thank you very much.
I just want to clarify, Dr. Ndlozi. So the proposal is that there will be this independent panel, say retired judges, and there will be no committee of parliament. Is that your proposal?
Yes, absolutely. Any committee is outruled. Because how committees, this is a legal fact-finding process. What do you need a committee for? It's not an ad hoc committee. Actually, the judgment criticizes the ad hoc committee. You must see. Because that's what you guys submitted there to the constitutional. You submitted probably this document. I don't know. But I can hear it thinking was part of the discussion of the judgment that no, an ad hoc committee can't do that, as well as an ordinary committee. So the majority judgment outrules both. But for an example, we've just allowed former President Kgalema Motlanthe to do something about apartheid laws. And nobody can say, no, that's not parliament. But he's not a member of parliament. We have got options. That's why the majority judgment is actually very strong. It doesn't tell us prescriptively what to do. So we have just to pass the test of its principles, and which are constitutional rather than anything else outside of the Constitution. They are constitutional. What does Section 89 envisage? And I argue that it doesn't envisage any committee before, because any committee is going to decide by majority all those things which is already crafted within the current rules. So that we can call it a panel, a impeachment panel, and it must be 5 retired judges. We must specifically say those things. If any one of them passes away, we replace. But they must be, their term is 5 years, and one of them must be a chair. One of them must be a chair. That's our concrete proposal. And that's the best mechanism, in my view, which will give us the best. So the prior process is when I draft the speaker, I agree, in fact we agree, that the speaker should be given, because she acts on behalf of the assembly. She must be given the power. For if she decides irrationally, we can always go to court and say, but it's irrational, we've given evidence. She can say, no, it's not properly crafted. Because she's supported, and this is the Honorable Nyami's point, she acts on our behalf. If I come to her and say, I've got evidence, I believe that Section 89 must be evoked, and then I've written that down with the supporting evidence, so I've put it. She says, no, it's not properly drafted. I'm going to redraft it for you, and then I'm going to refer it to the panel of impeachment. The panel of impeachment does its job. It comes back to us. We debate. We may remove the president or we may not. That's really my point. So finally, just the final part, the rest of the other principles are proper. Legal representation on behalf of the president, the subpoena powers, and so on and so forth must be given to this panel of impeachment, which must have a chairperson and must constitute 5 judges. Thank you very much. 3 of which can sit.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me take Honorable Shlengwa. Yeah, we are not yet.
No, thanks, Chair. I just want to process what has been said. So I'm just saying that legal pages are like an ambulance. But I think, Chair, we're making progress in answering. No, let me just say this one point, Chair. I think we are making progress in answering the question I raised of a deadlock breaking mechanism. So I think that's important. I think what arises now, of course, is the process in which, should we go down the route of the judges, the process of appointing those judges, which is obviously something we need to consider. Because what must not end up arising is a situation where Parliament is seen to be deferring its duties and responsibilities of accountability elsewhere. So there must be a situation wherein Parliament's role in that regard is emphasized. Because whilst Dr. Ndlozi says we are nice people and we are giving you a fair trial, fundamentally the people who have been given the duty and responsibility to oversee the president and the executive is Parliament. And that is very, very important and must be duly, considered in that regard. But in the main, I think that this sort of gives us a direction which can be taken. But Chairperson, the flip side of that coin, which I think we must consider very seriously, is the resistance of Parliament itself, which has probably landed us in this crisis, of holding the president to account, whether it's the current or past. Because if we are seriously saying that a question and answer session once per quarter is holding the president accountable, I think that doesn't make sense in any form or way. Secondly, if we think that we are passing presidency vote one budgets without any form of scrutiny, then you are setting up a presidency in itself for failure. Because I believe that in between the, they called it the impeachment panel, or they say impeachment committee, or whichever one, in between the impeachment panel and the parliamentary process, there still needs to be a parliamentary mechanism of oversight over the presidency, which must enable and assist that impeachment panel. It cannot be that all government departments have got a portfolio committee and the president accounts no way to parliament. Because then in that way you have totally given up, said, right, you know what, the accountability of the president for all intents and purposes does not reside with us. So we need to build in parliamentary capacity in that regard, Chairperson, to give expression to whatever an impeachment panel will be. There needs to be a parliamentary sounding board in that regard. And it cannot be the speaker alone who may be conflicted in certain instances or not. Whether you say it's the presiding officers, whether it's the speaker, deputy speaker, and the three other presiding officers, whatever. But we need to build in a mechanism as well, which ensures the impeachment panel is not reliant on an individual in the person of the speaker. but is reliant on a transparent process. So I'm building into what Dr. Ndlozi is saying. Fundamentally, the duty of oversight and accountability resides with Parliament. We may, because if even that report of the impeachment panel comes to Parliament, if it only comes to the Speaker, we must be able to build a new process on how that report is received. I mean, I know one person at some point said the former public protector was very strategic in bringing the report to Parliament when she said put it under lock and key because her term was ending and all sorts of other things. And said the Speaker may have had a discretion to say, well, I'll keep it under lock and key until whatever. So we must not build an over-reliance, Chairperson, in an individual. For argument's sake, let's assume that the Speaker is conflicted in this impeachment process you want to. He or she played some manga business, which gives rise to the President being impeached, or a process being set into motion. So I'm saying, Chair, let us maybe in the drafting consider building in a parliamentary mechanism. I'm just not clear what it is now, because I think it's a legal puzzle. But I believe we need to create a system of checks and balance in order for Parliament itself to say we are accountable and own. And if I'm a panel of judges now and the mess up, we need to be able to have a corrective action of some sort or the other. So initially, Chair, just maybe in response to that, I'll come back with the other things that I wanted to say. But I think in clearing the deadlock breaking mechanism, let us build on what has been said and put it to some test or other. But I think what Dr. Liz just said lays a foundation, which how can we move forward? We must find a middle way in this regard. But we are compromised by the fact that majoritarianism may, overtake a legitimate legal process. So if anybody wants to play the whole majoritarian what, let them take it to a motion of no confidence and not compromise the legal outlook which is envisaged in Section 89. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's been some very interesting matters raised. I think if we look at 175 to 179, it appears that the judge himself envisages a three-stage process. He envisages a preliminary process, he envisages an impeachment process, and then he envisages the third and final culmination, which would be a vote in the House. So you could well end up with an anomaly where somebody could be impeached by the committee, but not removed as a member or not removed as the president, because that's what it comes down to as the vote, the third and final stage, which would be unusual, but certainly I think that's also why it's coming under the May. And I think that envisagement is set out by the judge at 181, where he says not only at the preliminary stage, but also at the stage of actual impeachment, up to what he says is the final stage of voting on whether the president should be removed from office. So there exists a possibility that this committee, whether it's an external or internal panel, could impeach the president, but the House votes not to remove him from office. The second thing I think we just need to get clarity on is the power of the National Assembly to delegate its responsibility, because the Constitution at 89 puts this ball firmly in the National Assembly's orbit. And I just think that we need to perhaps get some legal opinion and legal advice around the implications, because the power for a committee of Parliament to do its work is vested in 56 of the Constitution. And that gives Parliament evidence or information, which would gives parliamentary committees the powers to summon, produce documents, etc. And it says the National Assembly. And if one looks at 46, the definitions of the National Assembly are set out there, and it refers to 350, no more than X number of men and women elected, and it sets up the criteria of what is the National Assembly. So I think that the legal clarity that I think that I would like to seek and see is whether in fact Parliament is able to delegate that function to members or not members of the Parliament as defined in 46, and what powers they, that committee would then have, because they wouldn't have the constitutional power to do that, because the members of that would not be members of the National Assembly, and what the effect of a finding of theirs would be, being that they sort of are operating in this grey area, are neither fish nor fowl, neither judiciary nor member of parliament, what their powers and ability and the force of their recommendations would be. You know, we deal with recommendations from portfolio committees, we deal with recommendations from Chapter 9 institutions, you know, and these are all recommendations that are set up to us. So I think that 57 does, however, give us the opportunity to make our own rules and regulations controlling its internal arrangements, proceedings and procedures. But I think that the comfort I'm looking for is a legal opinion that says that if we were to delegate that authority to an external body or external panel, whether they would have the same force and effect and what powers they would have, would they be regarded as a committee of the National Assembly as in terms of the strict definition set out at 46? And then again, you know, I just think that if we, and sorry to hop on about it, I think that we remove the discretion of the Speaker, the malevolent discretion of the Speaker, if we have that predetermined you know, set of criteria that JAFTA refers to at 178. Because then if the Speaker refuses it, it then becomes an irrational and unreasonable decision by virtue of the fact that, well, Parliament's already decided these are the list, and you could always put a clause at the end which says, and any other transgression that the National Assembly may by resolution regard as being a serious violation. So you could have if you have an unforeseen circumstance, have that. But I think that what it does then is it creates certainty. It reduces the ability for malevolent interpretation of serious, and allows us then to be able to exercise our rights as members of Parliament to be able to table motions in terms of Section 89 without an unfair or unnecessary impediments being put in the way for us to do that. That's just some of the discussion I think we need to get clarity on as we move forward.
I know that Advocate Jenkins also is here. From time to time, you will also come in to assist. We've been discussing some of the issues. Dr. Andrews and John, I think we can also work on this issue yourself, how you want to propose. It's just you are the one who are drafting the rules. Then we must draft the rules accordingly. And then if we can't make point, we can make three options. I think we are free to do so, just to ensure that at least we have applied our mind as broad as possible. We can also use Dr. Lose, the panel of judges to be assisting members, the committee of members. We can also do that. I'm just saying there are a lot of combinations that we have to work it out, just to ensure that the point that John is raising is an important point, because if says it's only the National Assembly, only National Assembly, it means all of us as members of National Assembly. And but Jenkins will come in. Let's take Honorable Kubisa.
Oh,
you will come all over.
You. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm glad honourable members have hinged on a point that I was thinking of whilst Dr. Ndlozi was still putting forth his views. And of course, he came out with some interesting points around the issue of the question of a majority scuppering the minority. And also the issue of that legal panel. He also brought in the issue of the high-level panel, which is led by the former president, Motlanthe. What was ringing in my mind was the question of where Parliament lies in and how to merge what was bringing in and with what we're bringing in at the moment, because it would be important to make this process a fair trial would mean getting an independent body, but the question that remains is the duty and the obligation of Parliament as espoused in the Constitution. So that element must also be brought in. Where do we bring in Parliament to do its oversight? I think these two processes are merchable. They could be merged. The issue of the panel, because we have got a president, how it was that panel came in, that was led by Honorable Motlante, and it brought a report to Parliament, and that report was discussed. And then, but Parliament must not be seen to be abdicating its responsibility of oversight. I think that is the crux of the matter, that as Parliament, we still must play a role. We must be able to process all these issues, because at the end of the day, the buck stops with Parliament. So to me, that is the crux of the matter as well. How we do that, we need to be assisted by the legal fundis to ensure that Parliament, within the rules, is well represented, to ensure that it plays its role, so that it cannot be seen to be abdicating its responsibility. How Parliament delegates that responsibility as well must be well enunciated within the ambit of the rules and procedures that govern how Parliament functions. That's my take, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you very much. My reading of the judgment and understanding of certain aspects of it is that indeed it does say that the current configuration of the portfolio committee system in terms of the current dispensation of the rules is inadequate in terms of dealing with Section 89 of the Constitution. But it doesn't say that Parliament can therefore not relook into that system and establish a committee or a system that would speak to Section 89 of the Constitution, right? It means when you use the portfolio committee or the ad hoc system, you can't really give effect to Section 89. But it doesn't take away our mandate and constitutional duty to say we can establish another form of a committee system that would look into Section 89. But where we differ maybe slightly with Honorable Ndlozi and the EFF is that we agree entirely that it's what we've also been saying on the sidelines, that what should happen is that the person then who should chair that session should be a retired judge. But there must be participation, or members of Parliament should form part and parcel of that political process, because it's an impeachment is a political process when you do it in Parliament, right? It's still a largely political process because the president accounts to us. But the other issue, Chairperson, where we sit, I think the constitutional court judges were saying, in essence, put in simple English or in layman terms, that the president must get an opportunity to account for whatever allegations of misconduct or the violation of the Constitution that were leveling against him before the matter is debated and decided upon in Parliament. Which means we can't have a system that turns the situation upside down where motions do not even get to Parliament. But then the role of the Speaker from where I'm sitting, and insofar as we're concerned, should be that you write directly to the Speaker, like we normally do, and the Speaker then would have to refer the matter to the committee that we've established, right? And have no power to say yes or no, right? But remember, the Speaker, as the head of the institution, would have to then put in motion all the processes that you need to establish such a committee and provide you with all the necessary resources, because you can't bypass the Speaker, who then controls the very same resources. Even from a political perspective, it would not make sense. So it's to say the Speaker can't say yes or no, but she's the first point of call. Then you'd have whatever portfolio committee or other processes we've set in motion, which would then be kicked in by the Speaker's correspondent saying, I've received this, act on it. But our view is that members of Parliament should form part and parcel of that committee chaired by a retired judge. Thank you. Thank you ever so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's good to have faith in judges. I served 3 years on the Judicial Services Commission, and trust me, they're only human as well. Retired judges also. There are certain things that Parliament cannot shy away from, and one of them is our responsibility in terms of Section 89 of the Constitution. It's one thing to get expertise from whoever to assist, but Parliament will have to take its own responsibility in terms of that. My first take on the proposal of having this external panel, I'm a bit skeptical because I do not want to see that the powers of Parliament or the legislative arm should be undermined in any way whatsoever. And I know there is the danger of majoritarianism and et cetera, but once again I say when it comes to Section 89, it cannot and should not be about playing politics. It should be quite clear what the situation is. On a lighter note, can you imagine when it comes to the election of a president that we get 5 retired judges to make a recommendation as to who would be the best president? It's unthinkable.
Madam, I thought that you were assisting us, Madam. What is your proposal? I think the point that you are raising is that a committee of power, whatever you call it, but that should involve members of Parliament.
Absolutely.
Whatever you call it, impeachment committee, whatever committee that you call.
Parliament cannot
outsource it.
Outsource our responsibility.
Yeah. Okay. At least I'm clear.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to link up with the point that Honourable Dr. Dlozi made, in this document that was presented by Mr. Kasu, in the first paragraph, it does not exclude the possibility that a committee appointed by the House may employ the services and the assistance of legal experts. So that is a possibility that we can incorporate that idea raised by Dr. Dlozi, that the committee may ask for the assistance of legal experts in the committee. That's the first point. Secondly, the document that was presented to us now is dated April 2016. The court judgment that we've received is dated 29 December 2017. I think it will help us in the subcommittee if we can get an updated draft rule based on the judgment of the Constitutional Court, so that we can have an updated, so we can make sure that the draft rule that the subcommittee considers is updated and based on the Constitutional Court judgment, so that we have no gaps, no ambiguity, and that we have the same document, look at it, discuss it, amend it, and then we can go to various political parties to say, okay, this is a draft recommendation. Before we go to the rules, how do we handle it? I make a proposal in that regard. Thank you.
No, I just thought that you would also take a point that no other person is going to draft it except you. You are drafters yourself. And then there's no other team somewhere that is going to assist us. It is you who have to draft these rules. And therefore, as you speak, also assist us to shape it in a manner that assists us. We don't have another team somewhere that is waiting to draft it. It's you who are drafting it. The team that we are having in Parliament to assist us to put it together. But it is you who have to draft it. And then we must be clear about what you are proposing and then how we want to move forward. And then we can then take it forward and that. Honorable Paul?
I do think that we should concede that the point we want to make around committees, the judgment was against Parliament on this particular one. In fact, if you go to 180 of the judgment, you go to 181, you go to 182, what the judges are saying that based your analysis or your work on how serious you treat that 89.1. They say unless and until Parliament realizes that 89.1 is where the crucial part is, so that the relevance of the of what Dr. Ndlozi is raising becomes the area of focus, because it then means that at the initial stage, you have given the power to some people to be able to assist you to arrive at a decision of how that process is to begin to unfold. I'll take you to in the judgment, Chair, so that I don't take, because you'll have to go through one for which I've just read now. Now, in 196, in the result, I conclude that Section 891 implicitly imposes an obligation on the Assembly to make rules specifically tailored for an impeachment process contemplated in that section. As I hold that the Assembly has, in breach of Section 891 of the Constitution, failed to make rules regulating the impeachment process envisaged in that section. So that's how far it is. It can be. Now, you see, if you go through from 182 onward, I'll even show you that whatever we're concerned about is a little bit of a problem. The initiation of such proceeding is inherently partisan, as the aim from the outset is the removal of the president. Now, this is what is presented by the Deputy Speaker in the Assembly as part of our motivation. And this is where the Constitutional Court rejects our proposal, that those ad hoc committees, as by parity of reasoning, the committee system is not suitable here too. The ad hoc committee do not constitute a mechanism contemplated in Section 891. For all the reasons set out in the judgment, and even going into detail dealing with the Mazibuko case. So we are in a very slippery road against the judgment if you want to recreate or try to sustain the argument that Honorable Sustian has been trying to say is within the Constitution. It seems as if the judgment in itself has already gone through that route after the presentation by the Deputy Speaker, which is, it means, because he was trying to defend our committee systems. He was trying to defend our committee systems and everything. But if you go through from 180 to 195, you find quite extensively why judges feel that our committee system is at a weaker level to deal with impeachment. So 89.1, they direct us to read that 89.1 and base the impeachment argument or the creation of a committee on the seriousness that the Constitution is providing.
Honorable Boy, I think we are assisting us, but also we must provide what we do then. Because the point that is raised there, that the current mechanism cannot assist us to deal with Section 89.1. But it doesn't say, therefore, we can't create anything in Parliament to address that. He says that the portfolio committee as a stand ad hoc committee issue cannot assist us there. But I think the court didn't say that what structure then we should set up, they're leaving to us. We have to demonstrate to them that the structure that we are creating can deal with Section 89.1 for the purposes of regulating the impeachment of the area. I think it's helpful, but no. Let us also go to what exactly now.
You see, Chairperson, we must read the judgment and listen to the motivation of the judges, so that when we start working on contextualization, I'm not, what I'm trying to advance for within this context is the logic that Dr. Ndlovu has offered, that use the panel of experts to become part of your creation and mitigating between the power of the speaker and also the power of the individual, which is where I'm trying to say, it seems there's some logic, and it seems the judgment itself can look more better than only relying on an ad hoc committee. That panel, which is a new innovative thinking from his part, that can we consider it quite extensively and a little bit more serious? Because as you read the judgment, it seems as if in the nature that we have proposed in that draft document, the courts have already applied their minds and they've already rejected it. So I'm just saying, build the capability around accepting what Dr. Ndlovu is offering, and we build that capacity. But for the judgment, if you go on even as it deals with remedy, it does raise questions of even of the power is to grant a just and equitable order, and the judges then show from their own position of being in the Constitutional Court what does it imply, and they then say it's upon Parliament to accept the fact that those small coordinating committees doesn't assist, and they don't get to deter them as judges to be able to advance a constitutional. They didn't want to put it straightforward that they would want to make sure that constitution, I mean, the way we have seen it from the parliamentary point of view, our committee system is not going to help with an impeachment. And that's why I'm saying that I would want us to seriously consider the proposal that has been forwarded by Dr. Rose.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry, Doctor. If you go to 216 in the judgment, it says in any event the proposed order doesn't usurp the Assembly's power. It merely directs that the Assembly must exercise its power without delay. That's what the judgment says in 216. So it builds, it talks to the reality of how we've been running our own system, and it tries to improve after it could see, after the Deputy Speaker put up a lot of argument, which the court didn't agree with.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I'd just like to put something for the committee out there. I think the crux of it, and I can elaborate a little bit on it a bit more, is that whatever stage in the process we are at, if you look at paragraph 179, it's the Assembly that bears the exclusive power, and it's the Assembly that will have to take a decision. So in paragraph 179, it says, the Assembly must have determined that one of the listed grounds exists. So the court says you can have let's deal only with the majority judgment. It says that you must have a mechanism, committee or mechanism. Now, the present system of committees, ad hoc committees, court found is insufficient for the purpose of section 89, specifically narrow scope of 89. But whatever we decide in this committee, whatever recommendation is made to the rules committee to say let's have an external panel or let's have a committee chaired by a retired judge or a committee chaired by a member of parliament but then advised by certain legal people, it will still be a report that must go to the House, and that's my reading. I might be mistaken, but the reading I have is that the House will take a decision it's included in the preliminary stage. The House must take a decision that one of those grounds exists in section 189, section 89, 1A, B, and C. And thereafter, they will take a vote. Now, that for me is a very critical area, because if the House takes a decision there that none of the grounds exist, of course, you can't move to the second stage. You can't then move to a debate on whether to sit. But it's, I think that is something that will have to be dealt with. But of course, the House can be challenged on that. I mean, if the evidence is clear that it is a serious violation of the Constitution, you have to go to the second phase. And if I may, Chairperson, I think that is why the majority judgment also said, contrary to the minority judgment, that you have to define serious. We want to see what you consider serious, so that we know how you're going to deal with this matter. In other words, it's not going to be an arbitrary matter. It's going to be rule-based. The whole thing is going to be rule-based. And that's different to what the minority said. Minority said seriousness is a value judgment. So it can go this way, it can go that way. And the majority said, no, we want you to tell us what is serious for you as Parliament. Write it down so that we don't have a problem with dealing. I see I've got some disagreement here, but if I can then just like emphasize the point I'm trying to make is put in your rules what is serious, deal with it, and take a decision whether that conduct that we have now discussed in the fact-finding preliminary matter constitute that, and from there you go to the second process which is then voting, even if it is serious, you can still vote to say that the president should not be removed. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. The challenge, I think, given to us at the core is when Parliament establishes a panel of judges, and that's the central question, is it abdicating its responsibility to hold the president accountable? And I argue not, precisely because of these stages that Justice Jafta is determining. Firstly, it would have been our decision. So there, when you establish a commission of inquiry, the judge in the commission of inquiry is not acting on behalf of the judiciary. And they may actually be a sitting judge. They're not acting on behalf of the judiciary. They are not there in their capacity as the judiciary. They are acting on behalf of the president. Their administrative duties. You've got a Davis Tax Commission, for an example, which is a panel of experts. You've got people who remove us there in parliament. They are not you. You've got a set of people there who are professional hooligans. You have approved in these rules. They are not you, but they remove us. They've removed me many times from the House, but they are not members of Parliament. The dead lady, what do we call her? The one who carries the sergeant at arms is not a member of Parliament, but she acts, she has powers in the rules. They are delegated through decisions. So don't be scared. That panel of experts is not removing the president. No, it's not. It is expertise that we are looking for, number one. Number two, we are giving the highest test, because what is outruled here is in the wisdom of, it's not the mechanism per se of our committees, is that at the initial stage, really, you can't subject this to a decision of politicians. These are facts. These are facts. These are not, let's vote. So it must be impartial. It must, you understand, it's an impeachment process. In fact, he says somewhere, he uses the word a trial, but he says it can be an investigation. When that person of the investigator in the ad hoc committees, what do you call her? The one who cross-examines. Yeah, that guy. You are not disputing to that. Now, President Zuma is just elected a commission of inquiry into state capture. He did not say, no, it's not you, you know, doing it. Because at some point, you need experts, particularly on this important thing of removing a person because of misconduct. Give them a fair trial. What is the highest test of this fair trial in relation to Parliament? For them to come, present and defend themselves and so on and so forth, we hear, we look at it, then the report comes to you. Because the Constitution says you may or you may not. That power lies in the National Assembly. It doesn't lie in the panel of experts, which we propose must be retired judges. And the reason why is particularly for this principle, which is implicit in the judgment, in the criticism of our committees. It's our involvement, because we at the end are the ones that are removing. It says that where Honorable Nyami Boyi reads, particularly because we are removing in the end. So we say, no problem, we have a chance to go there to people who are not removing you, that we have delegated the power to listen to you.
factually, you defending yourself and all of that, the report comes. It's fair. Companies do it every day. How can we as an important institution be scared of what companies are doing every day and we always succeed? The other day people were saying MultiChoice must do an independent investigation, or those people of international bodies, multinational companies. How more credible are we if we are to be convinced it's if the investigation is conducted by an independent body? Then they have exposed themselves. The test, that's the highest test. If it's internal, it's subject to our own political, because at the end we remove. That power is not moved. That's why he gives us stages. That's the first point I wanted to make. I think the advocate is wrong. The advocate must distinguish between when the judge is dealing with an argument and unpacking an argument and the conclusions of those arguments in the judgment. And at all times, the majority judgment takes precedence is what we have to comply with. That's why myself, I keep reading the majority judgment, because the majority judgment it encapsulates everybody and it's law. That's the law that we must follow. Committees are not going to be good. Ad hoc committees, page 82, section 1, okay, 187 up to 196 deals with the question of ad hoc committees. Then after that, they deal with the question of the failure to hold the president accountable from 197. Now, the last thing I want to deal with, Honorable Chairperson, is we're trying to implement section 89. We're not there are other many ways of holding the president accountable. What we are seized with is the expression of 89. There's still question and answer session. There's still ad hoc committees. There's still a motion of no confidence. Those are all. That's why Jafta says we would be wrong to say that there was no attempt to hold the president accountable. Therefore, the question is it in relation to section 89, he says you have failed, in relation to section 89? Because that's what the EFF was there about, you see. Is that, no, this guy must be impeached. A disciplinary with the UDM as well as the COPE. So my point really here is don't digress. The president can still be, you know, interrogated in many and different ways, actually directly by members of parliament. But, and these are really my last words. Section 89 envisages a pre-determined process of investigations, objectively. What is the highest test of that? It's independent, retired panel of judges that gives us our report, and then we attack. Whatever president, after an independent process, comes and still wants to stay, obviously will be a very pompous president. But MPs are subjective. MPs are subjective. We, members of the ruling party in the panel, for an example, have all types of fears. That president that they'll be interrogating could visit them in the NEC or in the Central Command team. So that is really at the level of an objective process determining an investigation. So that is what we have to say. Yeah. Even us MPs who are in the opposition who are subjective, we always don't like the ruling party's president. Anyway, these days they put up very difficult ones to agree with. That's really the test here, Honorable Chairperson. I think Honorable Nyami Boyi has saved much of the sections I wanted to read. We are outlawed from doing the ordinary thing, really.
No. Certainly. I think we understand entirely the rationale behind the points that were made by Honorable Ndlozi. In fact, if you look at where we are, we're not too far apart, because we're saying merge the two systems, allow politicians to play a part in it, because it's a political process in our view. an impeachment is a political process. That the judges, obviously, as we are saying, retired judges would still play a part. We said, for example, you'd have one chairing, or you can even have one or two or three as part and parcel of that exercise. But the report that would then go to Parliament for processing cannot be one that is put together by politicians. But politicians should be able to interrogate the president, ask him questions, because when you talk about misconduct, there are a lot of gray areas. Maybe Section 81A of the Constitution, say 89 rather, if you look at A, there, it talks about violation of the Constitution. I think that would be easier to determine when it comes to having judges dealing with that process. But when you talk about misconduct, it would include a number of things, unless we bed down the grounds of misconduct and we are clear about that. So we're not too far apart and so far. But all we are saying is that political parties should still be allowed to play a process in that. I accept what Honorable Nyambi Boy said insofar as how the judges have reflected on the issues of our committee system. I agree. But we must bear in mind that they were dealing with the current system once again. And if they were to tell us what to do and how to manage or determine and control our internal arrangements, then they'd be violating Section 59 of the 57 of the Constitution. It means that we can still decide on the best mechanism going forward on how best to deal with this matter. But our view is that we should not exclude political parties from playing an integral part in that process and ask political questions. A large part of the questions that would ask when it comes to misconduct would be based on value judgments, as Honorable Ndlozi has said. And value judgments would be influenced largely by our political ideologies. But when it comes to constitutional violations, for example, I think the issues would be more clear-cut.
Colleagues, what I wanted to make a proposal, we have had it, I think we have exhausted it. We are allowed to give options. We are not trying to convince each other until the end. We can give options. We are going to draft two or three options. One is a panel of judges. One is a combination of the two members and the legal aspect. We put it there, have discussion in our parties. We come back here, we see then whether we are able to persuade each other or not on that. I think we should do it that way. Otherwise, again, we can repeat ourselves forever on this issue. I think we have made the point. We have exhausted the issue. I think we are very clear now with the point that is being made on this matter. And then Dr. Melda also put the point. And then Josie, very persuasive. Okay.
Sorry, Chairperson, I'm sorry. I had forgotten that in our model, the political parties can have legal representatives who, or not, but they can have legal representatives. Our point is that stage one really must be constituted in the highest legal test for free and fair trial. So you can send legal representatives to the panel, they can be allowed to present evidence, they can be allowed to interrogate, and so on and so forth. I forgot that part in our panel of judges, which is really the first stage. Before it comes to the House for debate, which is the second stage, then the last stage is voting. Yes.
Chair, I just wanted to say that the one option that we might present is a committee that is constituted like this committee, because this committee is not constituted proportionally. So you do not have the question of one party having six members and another three members. You have this committee in that fashion. You also have the disciplinary committee in that fashion, not like portfolio committees. So that is one option that you could consider.
No, I was going to say, let me make the point earlier. Besides the judgment, this is now the state law advisor, Chair. In conclusion, they say in 34, however, in our view, there's nothing preventing the NA from providing the rules that the resolution or decision by the Speaker establishment of an ad hoc committee may permit to employ the assistance of experts, such as legal experts, in the discharge of their duties. This is what the state law advised us to be able to do, both in 34 and 35. I'm saying, Chairperson, you see, Chair, also try to listen to yourself. You are saying we should make suggestions based on the documentation in front of us. If you could please give me that liberatory role that I express myself as a member of parliament. It's very much important. So even if it was before or not, but the crucial part that I'm trying to remotivate and put is the need for legal experts at the preliminary stage of the process itself. That's the principle we should be able to agree on. And from there on, we'll then continue looking at how do you constitute a committee that could assist that preliminary stage. If we're in agreement, it's what I think would be in the best interest, because that's what the judgment is concerned about throughout, that the preliminary stage is very vital to fairness and justice.
No, Honourable Boyd, the point that I'm raising, bearing in mind that we are the one who are drafting this. Drafting this, we have already covered the legal, external legal aspect. You can call them judges, you can call senior counsel, you can call them whatever you call. But you may need them in stage one. Because stage one is very important for you to have an idea. And then from that idea, then you go for your house. You debate it. And then if you debate it, then is another issue how you do that. Of course, when you debate thing anyway in the chamber, you need majority. And then majority may decide the way it is and the whole thing can. But it's important the first stage. The point that you are raising is here. In fact, we are arguing very strong here. It is put here precisely because the point that you raised earlier on, that the first stage is the most important stage. It will going to clarify you seriousness, violation, what is meant by that, and then take it to the next, second stage, third stage, and then we are gone on that. I think the point that we are making, even prior to the meeting today, I think it is here already on that issue. And I think that you will make proposals, you will make two options. One option is the one that you are talking about, a combination of members plus the legal aspect. Another one, of course, also members, general members, in a manner that is no proportional representation, is just a team and working there to assist us on that. But even that team will need legal support. I think the team is raised on that. I think when that one is fine, I think also we do accept that the motion, Honorable Lose, I think we do accept that the motion would be submitted to the speaker. The motion is subjected to the speaker based on what the criteria. We look at it, says it's fine, take it to the committee. The committee work on it and come to the chamber, have a discussion, debate it, and then we move forward on that issue. Advocate Jenkins, you're fine?
I'm fine. I don't want to belabor the points that's been made, but I agree with the process highlighting, or what you highlight now. I think the principles that has come up through the discussion, I think there's a general consensus on that in any event. So I think it's good that we get some time to draft something, look at it, and bring it back to the committee.
I wanted to say, if ever there's no other issue about principle, let's go to the time. Let's go to the timetable, right? How much time and how long is this process, so that we don't be seen by the public that we're fudging. We want to raise all these complicated things without considering that the court has already directed us that in 60 days or what, we should be able to finalize the process itself. I wanted you to put that one. It's my suggestion.
No, pick one.
and to piggyback, really, I wanted to recommend Section 177 of the Constitution, where the National Assembly can remove a judge, but the process happens elsewhere, not with us. Like, just also to look at different parts of our law that give us a sense of how an impeachment process should be handled. The last one is this question of 120 days. It's not in the judgment. We must disabuse ourselves with that. The judgment just said without delay. But I don't know, Chairperson, with your indulgence, I want to respectfully suggest that we must be ready. By us, I mean the entire, we must have presented the rules to Parliament and adopted end of February, so that in March, the process of impeachment can start. That's my proposal. February has 28 days or 29, I don't know if it's leap year, but it gives us time for a draft, consultations to be adopted, then for a motion to be tabled, and then we're done. Then the country can see that we have really we've done things without delay.
I was hoping we could finalize it before the NEC tomorrow, but I suppose that was a bit optimistic. that was a lighthearted. I think that I'm very comfortable at the end of Feb, but I think we must also be realistic. And bear in mind, we may have to have a special sitting then, because we come back, 6th is the 8th, is the 8th opening. There's usually a couple of days. Then it's response to SONA, which takes over 2 days. Thereafter, almost immediately, the finance minister will want to table his budget. There's a brief period where parties get an opportunity to interrogate, then we have budget debate. There's only 28 days, so I mean, we're giving ourselves a 20-day window. So there may well be, if that's the time frame we settle on, there may well have to be a special sitting called on one of the mornings, but we also need to bear in mind that when we finish our work, it's got to go to the Rules Committee, bearing in mind that there are parties that are not here today that are on the Rules Committee, bearing in mind that there are other parties represented in the National Assembly that are not members of either of those committees, and then, of course, it's going to have to be tabled for adoption and or debate in the NA. So, I mean, I'm comfortable with that, to have it in place by March, but I just think we must realize there's only essentially a 20-day window, and if one looks at the working days within that period, it probably starts to halve or be there and thereabouts.
But, colleagues, first point is for the team to draft it as we have been agreeing on. That team, generally, advocate, we take about 2 weeks. Yeah, am I correct?
I think by next week Friday, we should have a draft.
By next week Friday, the draft will be ready. We'll have a draft. Simply means that the following week, we must meet again as a subcommittee. And then as a subcommittee, we meet, we look at the draft, and then take that draft then for your consultation purposes. And then as you agreed earlier on, that the letters will be written to all parties and given the draft and look at it and have a discussion on that. The draft, again, is going to have options, generally, as we agreed, just to ensure that we don't take one point and colleagues, when you go to the Rules Committee, people start raising other issues. I think we give them fairness on that. And then, of course, we have to give time for the Rules Committee, because I think John was saying February is too busy sometimes to have anything meaningful real to do, because the state of the nation, all other issues there, finances. I think why can't we agree that we will try our level best to finalize this work that we are doing by the end of March? Because that will involve consultation with the parties. We are still very, without delays, we are doing this thing without delays. And then I think we can make it. Kubisa?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I must concur with the possible time frame, and I wanted to say, if you look at the SAPC ad hoc committee, it took about 3 months or so, and then the one for the funding of political parties, it took about from June to end of November. We'll be finishing in February again, debating it. I mean, the time frame is reasonable. That time frame given by Dr. Ndlozi is somehow reasonable, but we're taking cognizance what Honorable Steenhuisen is saying. I must also say, Chairperson, some of the members of this committee will be overseas this month. They come back on the 27th. So that also must be taken into cognizance. The chief whips will be in Ghana and UK, and some of them are here.
Comrades, we've got a constitutional court outcome here that we must comply with. We are talking about Ghana. No. So let me give concrete proposals. The second draft Mdom Dala under a tree there in Mkanyawute or something.
You know, Chairperson, in Ghana's often this.
The first set of deadlines have to do with the subcommittee. And I want to argue that the only things that are in our control is really the draft of the rule. Those are the decisions of deadlines that I am concerned with. Obviously, we can think about anticipating the rest of the entire process, but it seems to me that we must have a draft rule when we separate from here on the 17th of January, I would propose, and then the final one on the 24th of January, which we then hand to everybody so that the Rules Committee can see it. Hopefully, the Rules Committee would have adopted it soon after that, but we can, if we adopted the final one and we circulated by the 24th of January, the possibility of the National Assembly adopting it is like 14th February. And the process is still going to start, if you think about it, in March, because there must be an appointment of judges, then we can start the process 1st of March or whatever. We're still there. But this is, on our part, what we must do without delay at this stage is a draft and adoption of a rule. And then its implementation is going to take somebody to put the motion, blah, 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 following the rule. So I propose let's get the second draft on the 17th of February, have the final of January, 17th of January, second draft, final draft 24th of January, and then we circulate, and then hopefully we adopt it by the 14th in the House of February. It's a nice Valentine's Day gift. Thank you very much.
Stay neither.
Yeah, look, I mean, whether the chief whips are here or not is neither here nor there. I mean, I've got a very competent rules whip, and she's, and I know that you prefer it to being here to, an army. It's not whether we're not here is neither here nor there. And I do think we should try and move it quickly. I'm just flagging that then we may need a special sitting in between the budget and SONA response to do it, because. You know, those budget days and are full. I mean, SONA is a two-day debate, and the budget as well probably be over a longer period. And I think that the SONA and the budget are to use some of the other language are going to be lit this year. So yeah. We don't want. But I mean, there's no reason we can't do it. But it's just going to require some specialised programming in this period.
We take the proposals, like all proposals, again, because how you consult is really your business. Because you may have to consult your parties, and then whether your caucus can be convened tomorrow or not is your business to do that. And that's what we don't want to do is to say that we are not informed that we must do 1, 2, 3, 4. Honorable Darkley, you are happy with us on that? Are you happy? I'm just worried that we are a little bit not with us. Okay. We are happy with that. Okay, we're with that. Okay. Okay, colleagues, let us then work out that way. I think it's possible for us to do so. Then we allow parties on the, after the 24th of January, and we send, and then we allow parties to look at it. And then towards, you know, February, whatever, we deal with it. And then we move on that issue situation. Bearing in mind, of course, that the Rules Committee also have a right again to refer it back to us. Just don't forget that the Rules Committee have referred many other issues back to us, back to them, back to us. We'll allow that space. In reality, you may end up around April, June, March, and doing some of this work. But I think the work that I'm just preparing you, in case again you revolt, that there are possibilities for that. Mbuyiseni, you are very right, but you are possible also of doing that. But the point that you are raising, colleagues, is that let us do it that way. I think, class, we are fine with that.
We are okay, Chair. So there is no meeting tomorrow, just to confirm that.
No,
yeah.
Must be forward to Valentine's Day. Proper Valentine's Day gift.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for your contribution. Meeting is adjourned. Then we are going to work it out on that.